Welcome to another edition of CFTV Live. I'm Jared Stansberry. CFTV Live is brought to you by our friends at Agrigold. You can check them out online at agrigold.com. Agrigold, they know corn. Jeff, I think we should be able to hear you now.
Hopefully. And it wouldn't be a CFTV Live if we didn't have some type of audio or technical issue.
It is the season finale.
It's
the football season finale of CFTV Live.
Tradition unlike any other.
Are you planning to cry at the end?
Am I going to miss Gray? Not really. Am I going to miss the show? I think so.
I wouldn't miss Gray either, to be completely honest.
Words hurt, guys.
I was going to say, I'll let Adam say something for himself.
Jared has stuck with me for a longer period of time, but Woody, as soon as this show's over, I have a feeling you're finally going to tell me what you really think about me.
It's going to hatch out. It's been incubating for months, years even.
Wow. So this has really gotten off to an awful start. There's a lot of tension in the room right now. So Iowa State ending the season with a loss to West Virginia on Saturday. Is it just me or they weren't 30 points better than Iowa State was?
No, it was sort of like the inverse of what the West Virginia-Oklahoma game was, where they played really equivalent but then made critical mistakes at times when they can't. And then the score was much broader than the actual gameplay was. Mm-hmm. I think the critical mistakes that they made were they turned the ball over four times, should have been five, with the end of the game kind of a fluff time. Uh-huh. I think Park hit a DB right in the chest, and that should have been five. So it should have been essentially four turnovers. They converted zero of the five times they possessed the ball inside the 25, converted zero of them into touchdowns. They were 3 of 14 on third down on offense. So the critical mistakes that they had weren't in like a talent deficiency or something like that. Now, granted, West Virginia's wide receivers were running by Iowa State, but that's what you get with a West Virginia game. That's what you're going to get. And they're defensively, they were what we thought they were. They played a lot of man coverage. They played a weird box. And they were primarily a run-stopping defense, even though Montgomery had a couple pretty good gains that were actually junk plays. Mm-hmm. We'll show one of them. They were kind of junk plays. They didn't end up where they were intended to go. He just made something out of nothing.
The biggest thing that everybody obviously talked about was Joel Lannon didn't get any playing time. What did you see that maybe kept Iowa State from wanting to go into that look?
I thought, honestly, I think Chris talked about it yesterday on Fanatics, and I think his take is right, that I think they got frazzled and the game plan that they wanted to establish got away from them.
Yeah.
And what I mean by that is, they are coaches, and at times they'll make mistakes, but not in the sense of miscalculating something, but in the sense that they would forget that that's a viable option despite the odds stacked against it. Mm-hmm. So when Joel was in there, it wasn't for the one play that got called back by a chop block. That front was really bad to run into, but 5 yards came out of it because it's just that's the way it happened. So I think they overthought themselves when they got into situations where they needed to score quickly, and I think it just became a like Chris summed up pretty well, the game plan got away from them. I don't think they intended to stiff Joel, and I don't think they intended to keep him out of the game, nor do I think it was a lot of kind of a huge debate topic. We're inside the 10. We need to put Joel in. We need to put Joel in. We need to put Joel in. It's we're inside the 10. Let's score. And they kind of forgotten that was an effective package, even, like I said, even despite the looks that they were getting.
Well, and they didn't even get into that many situations where they had the ball inside the 10 or even where they had it third and two and stuff like that. They kept getting in plays where it's like third and nine.
Third, medium, third and long. Yeah. There were a lot of third, medium, third and long. Their red zone trips were not in what's called the low red,
but
in the low red zone, meaning inside the 15, inside the 10. It was a lot of high red zone stuff, so like the 17, 18-yard line, and then they were getting third and 11 from the 18-yard line. Mm-hmm. Now, to take the counter side of that is, once you get to the 17-yard line, you throw Joel in there, and they load up the box, and he gets 3 yards of first down and 4 yards in second down, well, all of a sudden you're third and three, and that's a much better situation to be in than third and nine on the 11, because the hardest down to convert is third and 10 or third and goal from outside the 10. that's the hardest down to convert because the limited space that you have in every direction.
What did you see on that chop block? Did you think it was legit?
It was crap. I think it's a bad call. But you can understand why a referee would call that because anytime you see, you know, I'll use this tongue in cheek, anytime you see some type of tabletop action where somebody's pushing up here and then they fall down over top of someone, it looks like it's a deliberate chop block. Well, a guy was laying on the ground and the other blocker pushed him over top of that guy. It wasn't a chop block. It wasn't a deliberate intent at the same time. You can see why it was called because honestly, that play happened in about this amount of time.
Right.
So you have that to determine from 9 yards away if that was a guy falling over someone else or someone chopping into somebody's knees. So I think it was a bad call personally, but I can understand why the call was made.
I think that was the moment when it kind of was like, it's going to be really hard to win this game because it was just like they kept getting those field goals. They kept having to settle for field goals in the red zone. And then I don't know how long it was again that West Virginia came and hit on one of those long passes, but it was like, damn, I mean, it just might not be in the cards today.
Yeah, well, and it wasn't a great penalty, but then I think it was later in that same session Montgomery caught the pass. They ruled that it was a no catch. At that point, it was one of those things of like, all right, Iowa State, they can't get out of their own way.
Well, even after they reviewed it and they didn't switch it, and it's like,
yeah, and Heft said
it might not be the day.
I don't remember if it was Heft or somebody that I was watching a TV copy of, but it was somebody said this phrase is that you're facing down the burden of indisputable evidence.
Yeah,
that you have to, if it's on the field, it has to be indisputable, and you have to prove that something's one way. And obviously, every Iowa State fan is going to think that most calls should go Iowa State's way because we're looking through one lens.
Right.
But it's, you know, I thought the officials did a poor job, but in the same exact vein, you don't turn the ball over four times. It doesn't matter. You don't give up five touchdown passes, four of which were outside of 35 yards. It doesn't matter. So I think it was poorly officiated. I thought that was a bad call. And I think the game plan got away from Iowa State once they didn't get the things in the situations where they thought it was perfect. Because another phrase that I've heard is don't let perfect be the enemy of good enough. Don't let perfect be the enemy of good enough. Mm-hmm. Where it may not be the exact perfect meticulous play that you want, but a good enough play is going to get you 6 yards or 5 yards, which may not be a touchdown, but it's going to put you in a better situation for the next one.
Adam, were you going to say something?
No.
Oh, okay.
No,
I thought you were going
to
say something.
It's hard for me to have too much of a take. I haven't had a chance to watch the full game. I was down in a wedding. I watched a little bit of the third quarter. It is good to hear what you guys said about Lanning because I was getting texts all throughout that game from people at the game. Where's Lanning? Where's Lanning? What's going on here? But like you said, he is. They've got him kind of in packages situational, and if they can't put him in a third and three, third and short, people need to kind of take that into account. Yeah,
I was that guy before Joel's that guy.
You score three touchdowns one game, people think you should get 20 carries the next game, but it's kind of you're a situational guy.
Right, and I hated it. I guarantee you that on the sideline, Joel Lanning was furious that he wasn't, because I was. Every single time we would get to a situation and it's like third and four, and you're like, I can do this.
Yeah.
Or even if it's
well, you're a competitor, right?
Right. And even if it's first and 10, and I'm averaging 6 yards a carry because I'm third and three and I fall forward for five, then if it's third and, or not even, if it's first and 10, I get a first down and I'm like, all right, let's do something with the offense. And then I get pulled out. I'm like, God, come on. Like, let me do more. So I guarantee Joel is frustrated, but also he's matured as a person a lot, and I think through this process has done that. And granted, he's a sharp kid anyway, but it's a process that it's not fun to do, to be a situational guy, because then all of a sudden you can go from, like, I mean, Lanning has the kind of more of a stark example than I ever had, but he had 17 carries, which is, I think, more indicative than the five touchdowns. If you have 17 carries in one game and zero in the next, that's a stark difference. Where for me, it would go from like a Kansas State game where I had like 18 or 19 carries, and then the next week you'd get like three. And you rise and you go, you come and go with the tide. You're a middle relief pitcher. You're a lefty middle relief pitcher, you know, where you're going to get use a lot in certain series or certain games. And then all of a sudden the next three, you face one batter. So it's not fun to be a niche, but it's also sometimes really fun because you end up with a bunch of touchdowns.
So you don't think the coaching staff's trying to kind of push him out, get him?
No, not in any way.
Yeah.
Not in
just
any way.
Just want to squash that. Yeah.
No, the coaching staff was deliberately trying to push Joel out, they would have done that in a much different fashion and started earlier. Because the Texas Tech game, you don't allow Joel to score 17-5 within that game if you're intending to get him out of here.
Yeah,
I agree.
Because you wouldn't then this is what we're capable of doing with this package, and then be like, all right, now get out of here. You know, it wouldn't make sense for them to be trying to actively push someone out. Nor does it make sense because it's a good package. It's a good thing to do. There have been a lot of successful college programs that have put that in.
So you're a competitor too. Go inside Joel's mind right now. He comes into the season, he's a starting quarterback, mm-hmm. and now he's kind of been relegated to a specialty running quarterback where if he comes in next year, more than likely Park's going to be the starter and he's going to be doing the same role. Mm-hmm. How does that sit with him? Because he probably sits back and says, I can throw the ball.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know what I mean? And now all offseason, what is he working towards? Is he working towards getting a little bit thicker so he can take the pounding as far as running, or is he still working on throwing the ball every day with wide receivers?
This is what I'm assuming Joel is going to do if he hasn't already, and I think Campbell's out recruiting, right? Mm-hmm. At the time when he comes back, Joel has kind of, as a captain, he has the coach's ear, and as an upperclassman going to be a senior, he has even more of the coach's ear. So with him, one of the things that probably is going to be talked about is, what are your expectations for me? Because if your expectations for me are strictly just to be a third down quarterback, then I'm going to do my damnedest to be the best at that I can. If it's just to be perfect, exclusively situational. Now, if you're considering that we're going to have a more expanded package with me, then I'm going to work on doing that instead of doing the other. But I think the thing that he has to do before anything else is he has to frame set with the coaching staff, what do you expect from me?
Yeah.
And what are you planning to do with me? Because I know what Jacob's capable of and I know what you want to do. But does that mean I'm getting relegated out of that, or does that mean that I can still command something? Because if I'm commanding this package and it's effective, then I want you to tell me with an honest heart, if I can make this package good, then you're going to play me despite any type of look or situation. Mm-hmm. Because that's what you kind of have to do. As a left-handed middle reliever, you have to understand, like, if I do well at this, can I start expanding to the next thing? But if that's the case, then I'm going to button all the edges on making sure that this is right and this is perfect before I start going forward to try anything else. So it's just getting it's framing expectations for what the coaching staff has for him going into next year, going into the next offseason, and not accepting. And this is one thing that I think you guys, you who has interacted with the coaching staff, and Chris, I think, has interacted with the coaching staff. There's not a lot of BS on this staff, which is really, really nice.
Well, that was going to be my next question. Campbell said he loves competition, right? So mm-hmm. How does he handle that answer towards Lanning? Because he could say, hey, I'm all about competition. You've been with us now for almost a year. You know exactly what we want from a quarterback because of where we kind of put Jacob now. If you want to beat out him, that's what you got to get better at, this, this, and this. Mm-hmm. Is there even that opportunity for him? And I wonder, does he have that conversation telling him, hey, you still have this opportunity to be the guy next year because I do love competition? It'd be interesting to be a fly on that wall.
And I don't know. And because the other thing is they like the Zeb Nolan kid. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know what exactly the intentions are because, we've tried to pinpoint what the land ram is. We tried to figure out when that happens. And there's no real good precedent or no real good, defined pattern. Like, this is when they do it and this is when they're going to happen. It just kind of goes. So we don't know what I can't place what their thought process towards Joel is, whether they want him to continue to try and develop to be a quarterback competition, or do you want Park to get the lion's share of the reps and then you continue to work and instead, you know, to use another baseball analogy, if you're going to be a closer, If I know that I'm going to end up turning into a closer, I'm going to become Mariano Rivera and throw the nastiest cutter you've ever seen in your life, but only throw that cutter. And so with Joel, if I know that I'm going to be competing for a starting spot, then I'm going to work on everything. If I know that I'm just competing essentially to master this thing, then I'm going to do everything I can, like you were talking about, to bulk up a little bit, to maybe add more physical upper body strength, which may get more cumbersome to throwing, but maybe more beneficial to running the ball. So it changes what you're doing. And like I said, I don't know what that looks like with the coaching staff, but I feel like he's going to get an honest answer from him, because there are coaches, and I have experienced them, that don't do that. They don't give you an honest response, and they kind of give you the workaround of like, well, we think you're a great kid, and we love the attitude you bring, and we want you to be around, and et cetera, et cetera. When all you're looking for is, what do you want from me? And I'm going to do, if you're going to say compete for a starting spot, you're goddamn right I'm going to compete for a starting spot. If you want me to be a package guy, I'm going to do my damnedest to be the best package that this thing could possibly ever exist.
All right. Ready to go to the TV?
Well, considering my cord's short, I'll do more gesturing from a seated position.
I was going to say that I'll just slide over this way.
Which one you want to start with, Jeff?
And so then, are we going to trade?
Yeah, we can just kind of trade.
You got a limbo underneath this thing.
Okay.
You guys are dancing a little bit. I like it.
You got a limbo under this. To solve the audio issues, we had to shake some things up. All right, I think I can reach from here.
Yeah, you're good.
Okay.
What play do you want first?
So we'll go with the Montgomery run, because when we were talking last week and we were talking on the pregame show, we talked about the 3-3-5 defense just as kind of an example of what that looks like. I had it set up over there, but I can't reach. So unless I'm just going to shout into a microphone from across the room. The 3-3-5 defense, they have a head-up nose, which is straight one-on-one over the center. Then they have these guys, which are in what's called a 4-eye. It's numbered techniques of where you line up against someone else. So these guys are on an inside shade of each one of the tackles. And as you can see, each one of these linebackers is stacked almost directly over top of one of the defensive ends. So what happens is these guys they're going to slant in one direction or the other based on the movement of the offensive line. And where that movement goes, the linebackers are going to fit in an opposite spot, whether that means over top to kind of cup a run, or it's fit underneath to run back. So these guys have a lot of freedom based on what this offensive line looks like. Now, the other thing I want to point out before we start watching it is, when I said they didn't want to put Lanning in because they didn't like the fits, they didn't like the way it looks against a defense, and then I said, well, people said, yeah, Montgomery had a lot of good runs. Well, and I said, then again, earlier in the show, I said it's a lot of slot plays. It's a lot of making something out of nothing. This is an example of what that making something out of nothing looks like. So play it, and then we'll freeze it at a certain point. So you'll see that these guys are going to see the motion of the offensive line, and they're going to react in this direction because it's going to be a stretch play down this way. So go ahead and hit play. Freeze. So you can see that these offensive linemen are trying to get extended, the guys in front of them, to hold off as much as they can to not let these guards get a free climb to the linebackers, because this guy is getting held up. This one's not. So this backside lineman didn't do a good enough job of holding and making enough of a cluster to give these give these linebackers more freedom. Now, play it a little farther. Freeze. So actually run it back about here. Okay? So before he cuts back, just real quick. There. Okay? So now you'll see lineman, linebacker here. So there's a lot of color in Montgomery's face. So take this as Joel Lanning, for example. The reason why they didn't want to put Lanning in is what a scout would say, or a scouting report would tell you, is that they fit aggressively and they fit hard on the front side of runs. So this is where Lanning likes to insert, is right here. So a play like this is not beneficial necessarily to Joel's look because of what they're doing. So this is the kind of the X's and O's thought process of why they didn't want to go with him a lot. Now on the backside of that again, Montgomery makes something out of nothing because he is a running back. It's what we do. So go ahead and play a little bit farther. So this is just him creating something from not existing. So this is a good front side fit by the defensive line. It's a bad backside fit by the defensive line, set up primarily because this guy didn't get enough of a hold. This linebacker gets to climb to the mic. He can't fall backside. This guy has to fit too aggressively. So there's a lot that doesn't happen right for the West Virginia's defense on that, but on the front side it looked good. Are there questions on that? Because I feel like I was high level there.
I mean, I'm just looking at it from the Iowa State standpoint, and I like the fact that he did, like you said, made something out of nothing there. Mm-hmm. A lot of times you see a guy that looks, there's not a whole lot there, they'll fall forward.
I can't do that.
Get 2 yards, which, hey, 2 yards there gets you first down. It wouldn't have been a terrible play, but he bumped it out, got Iowa State 8 yards.
Yeah, I couldn't do that. I didn't have that type of ability. Number 11 would have run me down and refaced that. That's something that Montgomery brings that's special that not a lot of guys can do.
So he's obviously, this Montgomery, for my comparison, is thicker than the guy I'm about to mention. But his ability to cut in and out right there, kind of juke a guy, reminds me of Chantrell. Chantrell probably had a little bit more bounce.
Yep.
But he's thicker, where he can bounce off guys more than Chantrell.
Right. And Montgomery has, I think, more top-end speed than Chantrell did. Chantrell was really, really quick and had a above average speed. Not like, say, for example, Kanenawangu has excellent speed, but he has an excellent speed and excellent quickness, but he's thinner. So Chantrell is somewhere between the two, where he's a little thicker than Kane is, a little slimmer than Montgomery is, but kind of equal quickness throughout them. It's just the speed differentiates between the three.
You were a teammate of Chantrell. If Chantrell wouldn't have got the injury that he had, how good could he have been?
Oh, he's unreal. But the problem is he would freestyle a little too much.
He danced a little too much back.
Not necessarily dancing too much, but he would freestyle too much. He wouldn't trust his reads like he needed to. Like we talked about again in the Kansas game with Harger, is that Harger trusted his reads and popped out on the other side because he was where he was supposed to be. And Chantrell would sometimes bail on the read because he has so much physical talent that he would sometimes get to the wrong spot. So if he were to give himself more time and comfort and being disciplined in what he does, then yeah, he could have been unreal. I mean, regardless, he could have been a 1,000-yard rusher just because of his physical talent alone. But if he was able to understand what exactly he was doing and do that, then he would have been much more than just a 1,000-yard rusher.
Yeah, his high school highlight tape always stood out to me more than anyone else's. It's just him being a
stud.
Well,
his welcome to the Big 12 was against Kansas, and he just juked a guy falling to the ground, and he's like 170 pounds. So Trell's real good, but Montgomery and Kane are equally good. It's just for the sake of talking about Kane, pull up that kick return, because I brought up Kane and Harger so far, and Kane and Harger on this play make this play happen. So, Sai, before we start, one thing that I also really love is earlier in the season, when Iowa State's kick return has been good. I think it was the best or second best in the conference, and they've been good all year. But one of the things they shifted to is, all right, Ruth, you're good, but Kane's just better. Mm-hmm. So we're going to switch, because early in the season they had two returners. They had one that was basically standing in the goal line, which was Kane, and they had one guy standing on like the five, which was Ruth. Well, that meant they would just start kicking away from Kane because there was two guys back there. No. You're going to kick to Kane Nwangu, so we're going to take everybody else and push them forward. So you're going to if you want to kick it deep, you're going to have to kick it to Kane. And if you're not, you're either going to have to squib it and give us the ball on the 35, or you're going to have to kick it through the end zone. You have three choices: Kane, Pooch, through the end zone. If you can't do any of those things, tough. You got to deal with our scheme. So Kane Nwangu became – am I picking up anymore?
Yeah, you're good.
Okay. It sounded echoey. So Kane turned into a really good run because of three things. One, because he's really athletic, and he doesn't hesitate at all. So on a kick return, you can't hesitate. Once you turn it on, you got to go. Mm-hmm. Two, because Mitchell Harger has one of the hardest blocks in football, which is these guys are starting on the 35-yard line. He's going to make contact with him on the other 30. So they have a 50-yard run to just pick up speed, and you have to try and hit that from not necessarily a standing position, but from about 10 yards away. You have to stop someone who's running 50 yards at you. That block is impossibly difficult. Well, Mitch does it really well. Now, the third thing that makes this happen is kick returns, sort of like run plays, get fit from the backside. The backside's going to make almost all the tackles because the front side, there's so much coming at you, you can't come. If someone's running this way, it's really hard to slow down and tackle that from a full speed because you're trying to get down the field as fast as you can. Mm-hmm. So an easier angle is hipped off like this. So these guys are generally going to be the tacklers. So your backside is most likely going to be the tacklers. The front side is going to try and stop his momentum. So you have to work on both sides of the ball. Well, the backside for West Virginia is really bad here because one of the things they'll try and do is everybody's going to run fast except maybe one guy, and that one guy is going to pull back in the off chance that something pops through, and that guy's called a safety, and sort of like a field safety, but has more true, you are a safety valve for the kickoff coverage.
Is that the kicker a lot of the times?
No. So the kicker is the last-ditch effort. That guy, the kicker fits wrong too. So the kicker, generally speaking, you want to get a kick returner going this way. Mm-hmm. So if he's doing this, he's obviously not getting up the field, and then you can allow the net of the defense or the net of the coverage team to get over top of him. So the kicker has to be, if you have five guys going down this way and squeezing, there's still a small little valve right here that is available. Well, the kicker has to plug that close enough to the point where if he breaks through that front line, he can't just keep running. He mm-hmm. has to break and then switch to a direction and then let somebody peel back from behind. What these safeties do is the safeties are generally your two most solid tacklers in the secondary on your team. So ours were Jaquez Washington, Deion Broomfield, or Jeremy Reeves. Almost every year, one of those, and Jansen Watson. Two of those four guys were your tacklers because they're your most solid fitters with your and some of your best athletes. So what they do is no matter how wide this returner gets, those two guys are going to mirror basically 5 yards outside of the returner, and as that returner comes up to them, they're going to squeeze down. So if anything pops out, there's a contain player to funnel everything inside. There's a kicker that's going to stop any flow that goes around, and then all the other 7 to 8 players are squeezing to the ball. Then you have safeties, redirect, and contain. Well, West Virginia does a decent job of contain because it gets funneled up the middle. So without further ado, we'll actually play this. So I'll talk about Harger's block and the kicker as we're going a little bit farther. So Mitch Harger is going to be the guy that catches it right in front of him. So go ahead and hit play, let it run. So now we'll freeze it here. Okay, so this is going to be a tough kickout block, but this guy wants to stay outside. This West Virginia guy wants to stay outside of him anyway, so he's never going to come back underneath here. He's going to have a hard edge there. So Kinney knows, I'm not getting outside of that guy because it's irresponsible to do so. So you got Harger coming through in here, and you have this backside that's trying to get inside. Now, you would think, because these guys are all trying to go that way, and you have basically unblocked. Those guys are supposed to squeeze hard. This is the contain player, so what he can't do is he can't just hightail it this way, because then Kinney pops this way and it's in a foot race. So he's got to play up the field. This guy's your safety. So this is the one that player has to fit in, and even if Kinney breaks through this first line here, that guy gets him on the ground. So then we deal with it. Shoot, we're on the 28. It's worse than the 25, but better than a touchdown. So play it a little farther. Freeze. Okay, this guy, not a contain player, not a safety. This guy's running pretty much full speed all the way. Again, he's going to make contact with him at the 22. He's running from a 35-yard line. That is a long trip, and Harger has from here to there to build up enough speed. So he'll play a little bit farther. Freeze. That's a perfect fit. So Harger fits this up and nails that guy. Now, again, here's your safety. This guy is, one, way too far in the mix. So he can't redirect. There's nothing to get him on the ground. Also, Kinney Nwangu is really fast. So he underestimates the speed of Kinney. He gets himself too aggressive and doesn't fit anything back. So go ahead and play a little bit farther. Freeze. Okay, the kicker tries to do a decent job of making him go this way. But again, he's got way too much space in between this guy who's getting blocked. The next unblocked defender's right here. So in order for this to be effective, he's got to be more in the mix to make Kinney, as he makes that cut, he makes a cut and he gets tackled from behind. So he's too soft. The fold player is too far, or is too aggressive, and none of the other backside players fold to tackle the ball.
Grant Mahoney would have made that tackle.
Cole Netton would have made that tackle. You joke about Mahoney being... Grant Mahoney was the best coverage kicker that we had in a really long time because he wasn't afraid to do that. Because one of the things you'll see, I think this is funny just generally, different angles, but when I was running down the field at 245 pounds, not a lot of people tried to fit me up. One, because it's probably going to hurt you more than it hurts me when you try and tackle me. So one of the things that they would
Don't laugh, Jared. It's not funny.
I'm not laughing.
Okay.
One of the things they would do is they'd go here. They would essentially try and get you to trip and fall over. Well, on the reverse of that, if there's a kicker who is not nearly as athletic as Kinney Nwangu, and this is the thing Mahoney did really well, is he would fit and plug into this thing and then essentially just try and trip the guy, where you get up underneath there and you try and hit the guy in the knees. This guy tries to stand up and form tackle Kinney Nwangu, and Kinney gives him like a little 1-2 step of just that and bites on the whatever fake that is, and that is not a good enough athlete to stop Kinney Nwangu in the open field. So the kicker is too far back, doesn't aggressively fit enough, tries to make a form tackle, which, God bless you, buddy, but you ain't that good. The safety doesn't fit right, and then Iowa State does a really good job blocking it, and then play. This is the fun part. That's just Kinney Nwangu, an Iowa State football player, outrunning the entire West Virginia team. So this is he was a 10-4 hunter guy, and he was a state champion high jumper at, I believe, 5'10".
I was going to say, he's like a 7-foot high jumper.
Yeah, he's a 7-foot high jumper at 5'10". The amount of explosion that cat has is unreal.
So we just saw him score a touchdown here. I'm going to ask a question I don't really believe, but I know it's going to be talked about a little bit during the offseason. Kenne, seven carries all year, mm-hmm. one reception. Essentially, they burned his redshirt for special teams purposes. Now he's matched up in the same class as David Montgomery. Worth it for them to burn the redshirt?
You know who else they burned the true redshirt of, but just to play special teams? Jake Knott, A.J. Klein, Jeremiah George. Those guys all played 1 year of just almost explicitly special teams, because what that does is you may not know exactly what's going on, and you may not have had the chance to learn the position, but you get to feel the speed. So you get to be like, okay, everybody here is really fast, and they're really strong, and I have to understand what my body's going to do to get to that point. So what Kinney's role can now turn into is they have the M position, which is Ryan and Deshante Jones. But they also can essentially create a position for Kenne to be in there with Montgomery. The offensive weapons that this team is going to have next year is going to be super fun to watch, because assuming that Mike's still around, say Mike is. So you have true tailbacks. You have Montgomery and Warren as your kind of a second slot back. You're what Akram Wadley was for the Hawkeyes last year. You have this explosive third down or isolation guy with Kenne Nwangu. You have a tight end in Chase Allen. You have wide receivers Alan Lazard, Trevor Ryan, Deshante Jones, Epps, Hakeem Butler. You've not including whatever other red shirts they have. This is going to be an explosive offense next year, so it's going to be really fun. I just want to talk one thing too. So go to the Lazard long play. We don't really talk on this for a long time, but I sent out a tweet that was essentially, why do teams keep playing cover zero against Iowa State? Okay. Now, Iowa State next year will see very little of this for the exact reason we just talked about, because they have so many weapons. Iowa State historically has not had this much, this many dudes that can beat you. So what teams have done historically is played man-to-man, brought pressure on the quarterback, and said that we can cover your lesser athletes with our better athletes for a long enough time to get to the quarterback. That's what this pressure is designed to do. So they're going to play man-to-man, 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 man-to-man. They're going to have one guy who ends up dropping off, I think it's here, that ends up serving as a quarterback spy, so you can't just run the quarterback out from wherever he's going to go. And they're playing true man coverage. Well, great. Thank you. Now we're going to get Alan Lazard man-to-man, essentially with a pick play too. So hit this. Just let this run a little bit until... All right, freeze. So you have a pick play. These two guys are trying to get in the way of whoever this is. West Virginia's bringing six guys and a spy to try and slow down everybody else. Now, Park does a great job of feeling the pocket and holding onto it only as long as he has to, until Lazard breaks past this, which your spy doesn't drop back far enough. Lazard feels that, fades, Park hits him right in motion. So next year, this stuff isn't probably going to be around. Because West Virginia likes to play man, but they're not going to play man against Lazard, Jones, Butler, Trevor, Nwangu, Montgomery. They're not going to play Epps. They're not going to play a lot of cover zero. They're going to have safety help, which is super fun to say that Iowa State has such good athletes at the skill positions that you cannot play man coverage across the board against Iowa State at risk of you giving up a huge play. So I'll... Well, are we going to trade back?
I don't care.
I'll sit here.
Okay.
I'm in command position. I can shut up, Gray.
So since you get us all excited about next year and the weapons, I think one of the big questions that we're going to find out is, you just said we got Kenne, we got Montgomery, we got Warren.
Mm-hmm.
Warren, do you still say, I think you said earlier in the year, Warren is the most talented back. Do you still feel that way?
I don't know. He's the most well-rounded, I would think, from having the ability to get downhill and stay downhill, because that's Mike's specialty. He's a guy, relate him back to James White, sort of, where James was good in the open field, but his best attribute was the fact that he goes here to here, and once he's downhill, he's not going to make a move that goes laterally. Montgomery does that pretty well too, but Mike has just a different ability. He's a bigger guy. I think Montgomery's thicker,
yeah,
but Mike is taller, longer, mm-hmm. and I think just has more mass, more body weight to deal with. I'm not 100% sure on that, but the way he plays is bigger than what he is. So Mike has the ability to get downhill really, really fast. In order for that to work, like we've talked about time and time again on here, you have to understand everything of what's going on, because you can't make Mike doesn't freelance as well as Kanay or Montgomery does. So they're going to have a he's going to have to understand a lot better for him to do it. But I think if you have Mike and Montgomery and then Kanay, you have sort of this – I know it's not the same offense, and nor is it should it really be equivalent to it, but you have the Jones boys, Darren McFadden, and Peyton Hillis at Arkansas all at the same time. All three of those guys were able to be effective in the offense because of how well and how diversified they were in using them. So Iowa State's going to have to be a little more creative next year. But again, that's a great problem. That's a great problem to have. Is are we going to hurt you with, you know, am I going to hit you with a baseball bat, a sledgehammer, or a sword? Like, what are the things that I'm going to hit you with? Because we have all of these options.
At the end of the day, though, still for those three guys to really be at their best, Iowa State needs to put an offensive line in front of them
right.
that can open up some holes and really let them do damage in the second level.
Yes, and that's – so that is – I have less of a question about the offensive line as I did the defensive line. Because what most likely – I'm pretty sure of three positions for next year already. With Foster is probably going to be a left tackle. Campos is more comfortable at right tackle than he is at left. So Campos is going to play right tackle, and Good Jones probably moves into center.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know what your guard spots are going to be. I think they're pretty high on a couple kids. One that was redshirting was some
Forbes,
from Florida.
Yeah, Keenan Forbes. Yeah.
So they're pretty high on that kid. And then you have Bryce Meeker, who's also another option, who is more of a technician than a mauler. And my definition of a technician versus a mauler is a mauler is a guy like Hayworth Hicks that sometimes doesn't know where he's going, but when he gets there, he's going to mess up somebody. Doesn't matter who it is, but he's going to mess somebody up. Mm-hmm. And then it just relies on the intelligence of the center and the tackle to tell him where he's going. Where technicians are a guy like, I would say Jacob Gannon or Kyle Lichtenberg fall in the capacity of technicians. I know your favorite or William's favorite guy is Ryan Khalil for the Vikings. He's
Matt
more
Khalil.
Matt Khalil, excuse me. Yeah. Ryan Khalil is the center for the Panthers. But Matt Khalil. So his body's complete crap. His knees are just junk at this point. But a guy like that who's not overly strong but is going to beat you with general technique. When you combine them both together, you have Kelechi Osemele. You have a great offensive lineman who's a technician and also a mauler. But I think at guard, because they have technician at center, I think Campos is more of a technician than a mauler, and you have Foster who is at his weight right now is going to have to be a technician, but he's going to pack on some weight and he'll be real good by the time he's done. But so I think you need two kind of more physical dudes. And we've seen it. Tom Manning has carte blanche in whatever he wants to do with the offensive line because he's earned that right to do so. And he's going to make whatever he puts out there a lot better. And they're going to have more physical talent next year with Foster, Campos, Good Jones, and the talented three-star recruits that they're going to put at guard. So mm-hmm. I'm excited to see what the offensive line is. I think the only question mark that I have for this team next year is defensive line.
No questions about linebacker.
No, because you get Harvey back, you get Northrop back, you have
Tymar Sutton,
possibly. You have guys that are talented players, and regardless of if there's a ton of depth between Northrop and Harvey, you have the two interior backers that you want, and they play a 4-2-5, so you don't need more true linebackers. They have Brian Mills is coming back too. So you don't need a ton of great linebackers, but they only lose Kane Seeley. Everybody else in that linebacking corps is back.
I think Brian Mills got a lot better this year.
And Josh Jolis too.
Brian Mills got a lot better this year.
Yeah.
It seemed like.
He's more athletic than Kane is, but he's also an ox.
Mm-hmm.
That kid, when he got in here, because I was there when he came in with like traps up to his ears out of high school, and I'm like, all right, you, sir, are going to end up being a very strong individual, considering he was hard to hit as an 18-year-old.
All right, you good, Adam?
I'm good.
Thanks, Jeff. I'm going to miss you, buddy.
He's not going. He's not moving away. We'll see him around.
Where?
So we communicate in a Slack app. Jeff just informed us today that he mutes us because we talk too much.
Well, you get different comments on like when an article is going to be posted about recruiting, and there's like five people that have to comment on it four times. It's 20 alerts, and I don't want 20 alerts on my phone.
Oh,
I'm one of those guys that I hate any red dot on my phone. Like the person, the masochist, yeah. The insane person who has 5,000 missed emails,
yeah, sorry
has
about that.
5,000 on their list, like that would drive me absolutely up a wall. I would rather just mark those all unread and just be like, sorry guys, I can't deal with this.
Let me show you can mute the general ones because I mute the general ones in Slack as well. At least communicate with us a little bit.
Can't do it.
Wow.
Just you. I'll just mute Adam Gray.
That's perfectly acceptable.
Thanks again to our friends AgriGold for sponsoring CFTV Live all season long here. We're planning to do something for basketball, but we got to figure out the logistics of that.
We got a couple things coming up for basketball. Stay tuned on that. The product on this too, guys, as you've seen throughout the year, slowly gotten better. We're going to take a big step forward here. Hopefully in January, it's going to be a huge difference. The TV will go away, and we will actually be going into almost like an iPad where people will be able to sit there and watch it direct in there. It will look a lot better. So really excited about that. We're going to be continuing to grow the CFTV Live and get better and better every week.
You have something else you wanted to tell people about?
Oh, yeah. Just a quick thing for anybody listening there who's thinking about going on the bus trip December 8th. We're heading out to Iowa City. Only 8 spots left on the bus trip. So if you're thinking about it, I wouldn't wait too much longer.
There you go.
$80.
Thanks, Jeff.
Matt, it's been my pleasure.
Thanks, Adam.
Thanks, buddy.
We'll see you next Christmas when we need the Christmas elf. Thanks for watching, everybody.